Hey yo, and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Mo. Hey yo, I'm Addy.
Hey yo. Actually, you know what? I gotta admit, that's not good enough today. Today it's gonna be, I'm Mo. Ooh yeah.
Ooh yeah, I'm Addy.
Yes, we are gonna unfortunately have to open the show with the death of one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time.
No question.
A cultural icon. Macho Man Randy Savage. As most of you are well aware, unfortunately, Macho Man Randy Savage passing away from a heart attack coupled with some injuries driving. Not sure quite what the cause is. Not that it really is going to bring him back. So, 58 years old.
Yeah, and this isn't. We're going to sit here and basically, right now, all we're going to do is do something. Something similar to what we did on Edge. On Edge, when he retired, we just kind of look back in our memories of him. And something we'll be doing a We Talk Wrestling Spotlight on some other performers in the future. But most importantly, right now, I don't want anybody to think that we're going to sit here and be able to give you like a career retrospective of Randy Savage in the way of a Larry Matisick or Dave Meltzer or Bruce Mitchell or one of those people I really respect. It's going to be really more our memories. Yeah. Basically, if this had happened and we didn't have a radio show, Addy and I would have got together at a bar, sat down with a long, cool one, and just talked about Randy Savage. And that's basically what we're going to be doing right here. We're just going to invite you to join us in this, sit down with your favorite beverage, and we're just going to share our fondest memories of one of my favorite parts of my childhood, Randy Macho Man Savage. The Macho King.
Macho Man Randy Savage. Without Macho Man Randy Savage and Owen Hart, we don't do a show.
Probably not, no.
Because I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
And I'm not here right now.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. So I guess we'll start off a couple just notes on Randy Savage. Baseball, minor league baseball player before
he got
into wrestling.
Was he single A or double A ball?
It was Cardinals, Reds, and White Sox.
Yeah. And in the off season, he would wrestle under a mask as the Spider, and sometimes as Randy Poffo, with his father, of course, the legendary Angelo Poffo.
Yes.
Former world sit up champion, world record holder.
That
for
was
sit-ups.
Yeah, Guinness Book of World Records for sit ups. It was
and
that
his brother, the genius, full of glory and renown.
And renown.
Might not be familiar. Leaping Lanny Poffo, though I'm sure most of you are familiar. So, and Leaping Lanny Poffo, another fond memory from that fella as well.
Yeah.
And they ran an outlaw promotion competing with in Memphis, Kentucky area.
It was ICW, and Jerry Lawler had the Continental Wrestling Association.
Yeah.
They sort of later evolved into the USWA, but
yeah, it was International Championship Wrestling, wasn't it?
I think, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, and Randy Savage was the world champion, the heel. Leaping Lanny Poffo was essentially the babyface white bread champion, as Bruce Mitchell mentioned, and
some tag team matches, I guess, against the Rock and Roll Express.
That's right,
the Poffos. So
yeah, some of those are on YouTube, by the way. I watched one of those. It was awesome. Awesome. So, and ICW, there's some good talent that came through that territory. But, it was an outlaw promotion. So it was kind of for blacklisted wrestlers or wrestlers who are trouble getting their foot in the door. But a lot of them went on to great careers. But basically, where we're going to pick it up is essentially when he emerged onto the national scene in the WWF. And that's where we were first exposed to him. So, Addy, earliest thoughts of the Macho Man?
What was the managerial battle?
Yeah,
right. It was TNT, I think it was Tuesday Night Titans that they had, and they had all the managers there when Oliver Humperdinck unfortunately passed away. We talked about the battle for Bam Bam, very similar setup where, although not as drawn out, it was just all the managers were vying for the Macho Man. You had what Freddie Blassie and Johnny Valiant and Bobby Heenan. And
Jimmy Hart, I believe it was.
Mr. Fuji, Jimmy Hart.
Jimmy Hart,
yeah.
Jimmy Hart was the guy who had been reading one of the After magazines told me that, because he did in Memphis, Jimmy Hart had managed Randy Savage. So I had heard that, and I wasn't reading the After magazines myself yet. And of course, there was no internet back then.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody had told me that they thought he was going with Jimmy Hart because apparently Jimmy Hart had managed him before. So that was kind of so that was who I was expecting.
Yeah, that's yeah. And so, and of course, it ends up being Miss Elizabeth, who was a debut and new and unique.
They met in ICW. She worked as an announcer there, I believe, something like that. And
she was the lead announcer, I guess, in the television station.
And that's the thing you have to keep in mind. Randy Savage was, I think, by the time it was 85 or in that range when he got to the WWF. He missed the first WrestleMania. He was there for the second WrestleMania and was already IC champion by then. But the first WrestleMania, he missed that one. He debuted, I believe, shortly after Mania then, somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
Because
he won the Intercontinental title from Tito Santana in February.
Yeah, in Boston 86. Gardens, I believe.
It was Boston, yeah, Boston Gardens. I remember that was one of the things they actually played it on primetime wrestling. Yep. Back in the day, and of course,
we used to watch here in Canada. We would have basically in the mid-afternoon Maple Leaf Wrestling, which was kind of like the prime time Canadian edition. They would show it up here in Calgary at 2 o'clock, and you were still living in Ontario.
I was going to say, growing up in Calgary, I got Maple Leaf Wrestling and a show called WWF Cavalcade, which was a lot like the prime time wrestling that was out of the Hamilton station. But yeah, it was
Randy Savage came in and he had debuts Miss Elizabeth, and he got some early title shots at Hogan. Hogan was the first guy to kick off out of his elbow drop, but he was already in his mid-30s by the time he debuted. He was like 35 basically, somewhere in that range.
Wow.
By the time he debuted in the WWE, and he'd been wrestling since the the late 70s, so he was a veteran hand at this point. And
That was an era where the guys would go in and work years before they even got to the WWF. And then he, of course, went on. There was a storyline involving George the Animal Steele.
Yeah, that's right. He and the Animal, of course, that was a feud that went on for over a year, culminated in WrestleMania 3 and Animal's role. But really, basically, before that, they were feuding for WrestleMania 2. George the Animal Steele took on Randy Macho Man Savage, as they say, and he kicked out of his elbow drop. Was the first guy they publicly really acknowledged as having done that at WrestleMania 2. But it was for the IC title, and Randy Savage had won that from Tito Santana. He came in, he got the shot in the Boston Gardens, as you mentioned, and outside the ring, he was he was trying to be brought back in by Tito Santana, back into the ring, and he had his back to the referee and back to everybody. Back suplex going in, reach into his trunks, hit brass knuckles,
right,
threw them out of the ring. Danny Davis was the referee. They used that for part of the reason why Tito Santana was at WrestleMania 3, was taking on Danny Davis. Danny Davis was not a heel referee at the time. It wasn't part of a planned storyline, but they turned it into part of the planned storyline for him and his heel turn later on. And, that's how Savage beat Tito Santana, and then they feuded for the belt, and then they moved on from there to really one of the most interesting dichotomies, because what you had was George the Animal Steele, who had been a heel character for many years, feuding with people like Bruno Sammartino and such, and you had this guy, he looks like a caveman, he's a simpleton, and he eats the turnbuckles, and he has this big green tongue, and he's such an interesting character, most memorable gimmick of all time. I'd put him in the top five probably. Then you have Randy Macho Man Savage, flashy, athletic, the long hair, the gravelly voice, the crazy eyes, the music, the mannerisms, and another one of the most memorable characters. And they really played off each other really, really well because they were such opposites. And this mean guy against the simpleton who was fond of Miss Elizabeth, essentially, was the he had a crush on her. And,
Beauty and the Beast, right?
Yeah, yeah. Bring her teddy bears and flowers and those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a memorable feud. And even though he had feuded with Tito over the belt, it was that feud that kind of launched Macho into the next level.
It did. And that was just putting him into prominence and really putting Elizabeth in as part of that prominence, I remember a Saturday night's main event match where she had almost like a lifeguard's chair that they had at ringside for them to watch and be that sort of impartial person or get the bird's eye view, I think, as they kept saying. And that would lead in George Steele being in the corner of what's widely considered, I threw a tweet out there yesterday just to touch base on favorite Randy memories, and almost unanimously, I think there were a couple deviations from it, but WrestleMania 3 and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Yeah, so and I'm going to say this before we get too far, just to go back into his early win. Stampede Wrestling was the local territory here in Calgary, of course, and they were bought out in 1984 and shut down. And Jim Danville Neidhart, Davey Boy Smith, the Dynamite Kid, and Bret Hart were given jobs. And that was my territory. That's what I loved. I would be playing basketball outside, you know, in the alley, and everybody would keep playing, and I'd go, no, I got to go see watch wrestling. They'd all yell at me, you know, and but they shut down. I kind of walked away from wrestling for a little while, and then somebody told me that. That the British Bulldogs were there and Bret Hart was there. And so I gave it a chance, but I still wasn't really into it. I still wanted what I wanted. I wanted Stampede Wrestling. That's when I was first introduced to the Randy Savage. That's when I saw him win that title in Boston Gardens on Maple Leaf Wrestling in the afternoon. Yeah. And what, like you said, he's part of the reason why we're doing this show. He was really the first WWE character. Him and Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan took on, I can't remember his name, but there was a wrestler from Korea who they had.
Killer Khan.
No, it wasn't him, but it was a jobber character, essentially.
Oh, and Tiger Chung Lee.
Tiger Chung Lee. Thank you very much. And Tiger Chung Lee, and, you know, I mean, people kept on telling me I had to see this guy, and then I saw this Tiger Chung Lee guy, and he looked like a killer, and then Hogan came out there and destroyed him. Those two moments were what turned me onto the WWF at the time. So, early on, too, I hadn't been watching WWF for very long when we see this Randy Savage guy pull one of the most heinous acts in one of the most greatest feuds of all time when he crushed the larynx of Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and put him out for many months. Dragon had been coming off of a hot feud with another heel, Jake the Snake Roberts, where he'd been DDT'd outside the ring, and he brought a dragon down to
the Komodo Dragon
down to counter him. So talk about the larynx crushing.
Well, as a 9-year-old boy, I remember running a Saturday morning in tears to my mom and dad, asking if Ricky was going to be okay, because Bruno Sammartino had said that his larynx was crushed. I didn't even know what a larynx was.
Neither did I, but it sounded serious.
But it was crushed.
Absolutely.
And just Randy Savage's. Blatant disregard for the safety of Ricky Steamboat and bragging about it.
Yeah, they're having this match, and for no reason. He basically he doesn't even try and win the match. He just tries to injure the guy. Well, and they didn't even really seem to have any heat. It was just an act of a malicious asshole.
But it was after.
Yeah, that's
what
the thing.
It was. It was after that happened.
Steamboat won the match by count out.
I think so. But he bragged about it after, and that was the part where it was, you know, him just going, "I'm glad that I did it," you know, and he's doing that, and that was enough. As I said,
and I was young enough to think that the guy's career was really over because I didn't understand wrestling at the time. We're marks, right? We're kids, little kids. I'm going, "Oh, he's ruined his career," and then he came back and
at the Saturday night's main event, Savage had a match and. Ricky, I think it gets George the Animal Steel.
Yeah.
Too. And Ricky came out in the aisleway and just pointed, and it was,
that's right.
Know, oh, he's back. And
that's right. And it was such a hot feud, and Savage was such a hot heel. In fact, he took on around this era, as a heel, he took on and defended the IC title in a Saturday night's main event against Jake the Snake Roberts. They're both heels. But Roberts was getting started to play subtle babyface as the match goes on. Roberts was kind of he got the crowd reaction, and that's how hot. I mean, Roberts was hated, but that's how hated Savage was, that he was able to kind of turn Snake a babyface. Plus, I'm sure the crowd wanted to see a title change just because it was rare. But and that was one of the great matches. The first time I ever saw a heel versus heel match that I can recall, also, and it was just awesome. So anyway, so that leads out to Mania. And,
well, the larynx crushing and the return on Saturday night's main event. As you said, I lived in Ontario, Canada, Southern Ontario, and it was that was enough for a 2-hour drive and to convince my dad to go to Pontiac, Michigan, and while. A lot of people there were there for Hogan and Andre. I was there to see Ricky Steamboat get his revenge.
And, yeah, you know what? That was really how I was there, too. I watched it on closed circuit television in the Saddle Dome here, the Olympic Saddle Dome at the time. Now the Scotiabank Saddle Dome now here in Calgary, the home of the Calgary Flames. And we watched it there, and I remember watching the match because I was this huge Ricky Steamboat fan. And there was these guys, and we were like, you know, 11, 12, probably 12 years old or something like that. And there was these guys who were behind us, like 15, 16-year-olds, a bunch of them, and they were all cheering for Savage. I thought they were the biggest assholes. How could they cheer for him what this guy had done to Ricky Steamboat, almost ending his career? But it's because Savage was cool, and so people were starting to turn around to that. And,
Actually, it was because those people were from Edmonton.
I said they were assholes. I didn't say they were stupid.
Oh, okay. Well, but no, I mean, regardless, that was enough to get that. That was what got me to convince my dad to drive and take myself and another friend down. And what is widely considered one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time. And depending on who you talk to, they'll say it is the greatest WrestleMania match. Of all time.
And I believe you said greatest WrestleMania match of the first 10 years. I'm not sure it's the best match, but I think it is the greatest match because those aren't necessarily the same things. But it was a tremendous... I remember watching it back and forth, pinfall attempt after pinfall, quick pinfall attempts. The drama, I mean, watching it live, the place exploded when Steamboat won, and it was like nothing we had seen. You didn't see that in the WWF.
Well, you didn't see... On that large scale, you didn't see matches that were that fast-paced that long.
No.
And that's what it was, is that there really wasn't a time in
that
match...
It was fairly early in the card, wasn't it?
About mid-card, I guess. Midway in the card. Yeah, but it wasn't a time where... There wasn't a time where there was a lengthy rest spot, as they say, or anything that way. It was just... It was go, 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 go. And, you know, they didn't... And part of it is...
Two great athletes.
Well, it was. And part of it is the Randy Savage nature of wanting to have that whole match laid out ahead of time. And so, you know, like a great...
Which is fairly common now, but something really that, you know, he wasn't so common when he started doing that, really laying out move for move, every move in the match. And in fact, some people, like a Ric Flair even, would make fun of him for it.
So, well, and Ricky Steamboat himself wasn't comfortable doing it.
Yeah, but it worked out.
But the thing, and the reason I think that worked out, and the reason that it became such a different deal is because, again, people weren't pre-planning the matches, so you had to stop in the quote-unquote rest spots. The rest spots were there so you could call your next 5-6 spots.
Yeah.
Primarily, right? So you stick them down. They didn't have that, so it was go, 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 because everybody knew, or I say everybody, both guys knew where they needed to be. And, you know, as I said, I tweeted and almost unanimously considered by the fans that we talked to Randy Savage's greatest moment.
In many ways, I he had a lot of great moments. It's difficult to say, but
I can't pin one down.
Coming out of that, pretty shortly afterwards, there was a Saturday Night's main event directly after this great match where Hercules Hernandez took on Ricky Steamboat and had him in the his backbreaker finisher, and
right.
Looked like he was going to win the IC title. And Savage comes out and pulls Steamboat off because he wanted to be the one to win the title back, but they changed plans and went in a different direction, and it's a great thing they did because Savage got turned babyface and became an incredibly hot babyface then, and of course the Honky Tonk Man ended up getting that IC title coming off of this.
So. Well, that's how Honky won the title because Ricky Steamboat's wife was having a son who's in developmental right now, Richie, and he took time to go. He wanted to take time off to go be with his family, and so they took the title off him. Supposed to be Butch Reed. Butch Reed was nowhere to be found, and so they gave it to the Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah,
And Honky Tonk Man started calling himself the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time.
Yeah.
And that is where Savage had the issue.
Yeah,
and that's what turned Savage babyface.
They would
go to Savage and go, you know, he'd say, "I don't know about that," you know, and so that's what did it though. That
yeah,
was
right.
enough because I think he was getting enough sympathy as it was because he was just this, you know, a lot like The Rock, this larger than life presence.
Yeah.
That, you know, like you said, the 16-year-olds at WrestleMania 3 were cheering for him. It wasn't going to take long for everybody to.
No, that's the thing. Know? Just so, because he was so incredibly charismatic and intense, and you know, it didn't hurt that he had Elizabeth by his side. Now he's a babyface, and she was a likable character. And,
yeah.
And, you know, and the Honky Tonk Man did two heinous acts, along with the Hart Foundation holding him. He was hit with the guitar shot before that became a cliche,
mm-hmm.
back when that actually meant something.
Yeah.
And even more important, even worse, in most people's eyes, wasn't that he hit with this guitar shot that just looked, you know, heinous.
But shoved
he
Elizabeth.
Shoved Elizabeth That's before right. doing it. That was going too damn far.
Yeah, oh, come on. Well, and then he was standing over Elizabeth and was going to hit Elizabeth with the guitars.
That's
Elizabeth
right.
had her hand out, and then Savage managed to valiantly come and save, and of course he ended up getting the guitar. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's that feud.
Hot, great for both characters. Hot feud for the IC title then. They were, you know, going on the road, and Hogan would go on the road on one end, and Savage would go, and Honky would go out on the other end, and headline these shows, and do great business.
It was tremendous, and the thing was, again, that feud never really got a chance to...
never
to
really culminated.
Culminate outside of...
They didn't have pay-per-views all the time, so, I mean, they could have a blow-off match for that feud at the Madison Square Garden. You know, and
well,
not
no,
have
it was,
or anyplace else, right? They didn't have to have that
at
a pay-per-view.
It was set to culminate at WrestleMania 4.
But then they changed their mind.
No. Honky wasn't going to drop the
That's
belt.
That's right. Honky changed their mind.
And so in order to placate Savage, they had him entered into the tournament in WrestleMania 4. And with...
That's right. DiBiase was actually originally
going to win the tournament. That's right.
That's right.
And so Honky, they blew that off. I want to say it's a Saturday night's main event mm-hmm. that they blew that off of, and that was the formation of the Mega Powers.
The Mega Powers. That's right.
The Madness and the Mania.
That's right. That's the first time they got together, the Madness and the Mania. And then, of course, in the main event of WrestleMania 4, Randy Savage had a... four matches that
well,
night.
No, well, let's talk about the Mega Powers formation first,
okay.
because that was a deal where...
Well, the thing is, they kind of shook hands, and they were looking at each other, right?
Well, what happened was, it was the Hart Foundation and the Honky Tonk Man.
That's right.
Had Savage up, and again, we're going
to
do the guitar
Elizabeth
shot
went to the
a
back
second time.
Didn't know who she was going to get.
Elizabeth,
she came out with
Elizabeth just ran to the back, yeah, and came yeah. out with Hogan, who cleared house, and that's when they did, you know, the handshake, and then they did
yeah,
the
can
back.
We trust each other. They were looking back and forth, looking at the crowd.
Savage looking at the crowd,
just
doing the
milking
spinning.
A moment, and then the handshake. You and I have imitated each of that doing that handshake to each other.
Oh, I don't
all
know.
The time, because it's just hilarious. Just to do, you know, it's just awesome, awesome moment.
I don't know how many wrestling fans of 20 years haven't done that handshake. You
yeah.
know? Because it just was such
one of you pretending to be Hogan, one of you pretending to be Savage with the wild eyes, and Hogan with the cheeks blowing up, and, you know, yeah, just great stuff.
Just great. And that's what, and then as you said, WrestleMania 4.
She did it again. She went out in the main event with Andre at the ringside. She went out halfway through and brought out Hogan again.
Well,
at this point, you realize it wasn't just a one-time thing. These guys were really going to be... friends,
well,
team,
should be,
right?
Should be pointed out, Randy Savage, the deal was that he fought four times.
Yeah.
And the tournament itself,
and
very...
And DiBiase had a bye.
Well, the tournament, the whole tournament, 14-man tournament, because Hogan and Andre got a bye into the second round.
And going into that tournament, I was certain that either Hogan or Andre, probably Hogan, I was like, oh, he's just going to win the title back again. Because, I mean, as a kid, that's what... It's like, well, Hogan's going to win it, right?
What?
So the fact that he didn't win it was a huge surprise to me that night when watching that at the Stampede Corral, the old Home of the Flames, where they had moved the next WrestleMania to.
I don't know where, or who, rather, was behind the booking, but I want to say Pat Patterson, because the whole tournament was laid out just brilliantly. Just brilliantly. Like, you had... Ted DiBiase fighting twice.
Yeah.
And then Hogan and Andre double disqualification, so Ted DiBiase got a bye into the finals. So
did he take on Hacksaw Jim Duggan in the first round?
Hacksaw, then the Rock, Don Morocco.
That's right.
And so he, which is what was the best match of that WrestleMania, actually, was DiBiase against the Rock, Don Morocco. But then you had Savage, who...
Yeah, that tournament, while it had greatly booked. Not a lot of greater in-ring action.
No, no, but just, I'm talking the booking. And Savage beat Butch Reed, and then he beat Greg the Hammer Valentine, and then the one-man gang had a bye in the second round. So one-man gang, the 747, the 400-pounder, was fresh sitting in the second round. So Savage had to fight somebody who was didn't have to wrestle again.
Yeah.
And then Savage, of course, by disqualification, which is really stupid, we booked part of the tournament. But that was
one-man
going
gang
in.
Got the first title match against him at Saturday night's main event shortly
right.
after.
That's
so,
right. But,
that's where they had the
rematch. So Savage wrestling four. It'll be his fourth match going against DiBiase, who again was fresh. So you had Savage fighting two fresh guys in a row. One, the biggest guy in the tournament. The first time, and the second time, other than Andre, yeah. And the second time, one of the, probably the odds-on favorite, probably the odds-on favorite once, to the casual fan, once Hogan and Andre were eliminated, right?
Yeah.
So, beautifully booked, and that started the best storyline that Vince McMahon has ever done.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I just want to say, looking back at that WrestleMania, him winning that title... him and Elizabeth and Hogan's, you know, puts Elizabeth on his shoulders and Savage,
well, Savage
right away.
Did it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Savage, yeah. But
Hogan's idea
and Savage automatically already has that quick glance of, I don't trust this guy. I don't trust, he's so jealous of Elizabeth. That gimmick was even played up there. And so that,
oh, the paranoia,
the
yeah.
The paranoia was right at the start from when he won the title and Hogan was in the yeah. ring with him there. And, you know, I mean, the two images, that to the Elizabeth and him with the title and Bret Hart coming back in after being double-crossed by Bad News Brown and and turning face, the two moments of WrestleMania 4 that stick out of my mind watching it live as a youngster.
Well, I've seen WrestleMania 4 about... 5,000 times to the point where I can do it word for word, the commentary.
Yeah. Yeah. WrestleMania 4 also had the best Hogan promo, I believe, of all time, so I'll say that too.
And a great Savage promo, and it had that Andre the Giant Bob Uecker promo moment that they do when he grabs him and
shakes
him, right?
And choking him, yeah, that's awesome.
That, but anyway, that was WrestleMania 4, really probably from a... professional standpoint, the peak of Randy Savage, the first time he won the title and the time, you know, and the mega powers to follow that, probably when Randy Savage was at his professional peak. Mm-hmm. Maybe not his
and
best
the
match.
The mega powers
the same, but
fought the mega bucks up at the SummerSlam coming out of this event.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to that. Talk about the mega bucks versus the mega powers.
Well, mega powers, mega bucks, that was, again, the very first SummerSlam. Jesse the Body Ventura, the special guest referee. Basically, that was just DiBiase and Andre, the Mega Bucks, against the Mega Powers, Hogan and Savage. And that was the feud at the time. It was the two top baby faces against the two top heels. So there's not, I guess, too terribly much to go into with that. It wasn't a very...
Well, there's the moment with Elizabeth in the skirt.
Where she shows the skin, I guess.
But it's not so much about her showing the skin.
Well, I think it
was. That plays into the storyline. That's my point. It plays into the storyline of the paranoia and jealousy that this was Hogan's idea for her to show the skin to distract...
Wow.
Distract...
they twisted that after,
Jesse.
Though.
Well, but, you know...
Yeah,
yeah,
they twisted it after.
But that's what I'm
after.
Saying. They did. They used that, right?
They did use that. And Savage
that's
claimed
mainly the
that
big
was,
thing about it.
That was Hogan's idea, yeah. And then you had the second Survivor Series where the Mega Powers stood tall in I forget who it was. Probably the Twin Towers, I'm guessing, is who they beat against. Because
the Twin Towers were Akeem now.
Akeem and the
Big Boss and the Big Boss Man.
Yes.
Akeem, the former one-man gang.
That's right. That's right. The Big Boss Man. So that, but all the way through, you are still seeing. I mean, Savage is crazed, and so Savage really didn't ever change his character.
And that's one of the things that actually made him work. It's like I look back on Randy. Randy Orton. The first time when he first came in, he was this white bread baby face. The second time after Hunter turned on him, they tried to make him this friendly white bread baby face, and both times because that's not who he is, it didn't work. This third time, it's working a lot better because they haven't really essentially changed the character because you can't make him something he isn't. They didn't try and do that with Savage. They let Savage continue to be the crazed, intense, psychotic, paranoid, savage. It's just he was cool and charismatic and taking on the bad guys.
Well, I compared him to The Rock, right? It's a similar idea that the you know, The Rock didn't when he did turn and it was successful, not as Rocky Maivia, but when he turned and it didn't change his character from when he became The Rock.
Exactly.
He didn't change. And so that was what happened, and then so you keep going forward to the second ever main event on Saturday on NBC on Friday night.
We've talked about this one before, but just a little bit in briefing, we were talking about some of our favorite moments, and we brought this up, but in the past in some of our shows, but this was a great angle, a great night. The Mega Powers exploded on national TV in front of this huge audience.
That's right. They got someone was on Savage was at the on the ring apron and got knocked into Elizabeth, knocking her out cold, and Hogan took Elizabeth to the back, almost in his arms, like it was like say King Kong, carrying, just bringing her to the back, and she's just unconscious and takes her to the back, and meanwhile the Twin Towers are beating on Randy, and then finally, by the time Elizabeth revives, she says, Hogan stays with her, and then Elizabeth revives and goes, go help Randy, and yeah. So that's when Hogan goes and helps Randy out, and that was part of it, again, is that that's what made it such a great angle, is that you could see Randy's point.
Yeah, that's the thing. He wasn't just some asshole. He was some asshole, but he was still being an asshole, but you know what? It was his paranoia and his whatever, but there was a logic behind his character.
You know what it was at the, now we go back to that SummerSlam. You know what it was that they used at the SummerSlam is when Hogan grabbed Liz's ass.
That's right.
When she was on the shoulders. And it wasn't really that he,
No,
was
just
groping her.
No.
He was just putting his arm around and happened to touch her ass, and they keyed in on it and used that and Savage.
Right.
That was the crowning moment. That was the proof that Hogan had lust in his eyes for Elizabeth, right?
Yeah, that Randy Savage Saturday Night's main event, the promos, just the intensity, just that moment, it led to a Mania that did monster business.
Oh, the Mega Powers exploding.
Let's put it this way. If that same angle was done in today's day and age, it would be close to probably 2 million buys, the amount of business that they did, compared to what this last WrestleMania, getting over 1 million is a major success, and this pay-per-view coming up tonight, Over the Limit, which likely will get 60,000.
Yeah,
and we're looking at a pay-per-view equivalent of about 2 million buys to prorate it.
Essentially, you're looking at a pay-per-view doing 300 times the buys of Over the Limit.
Yeah, yeah, how successful this was. That's how good this was. And, it was a year-long storyline. And when Randy Savage turned on Hogan as a touring champion, very hot, selling out all over the place. Unfortunately, they could have stayed with him as a champion. He was hot as a champion. But it's kind of like Vince Sr. in that Bob Backlund Superstar Billy Graham thing. He already had the idea that he was going to lose the title on this date. And so that's what they did.
Right, the Edge thing.
Yeah.
But, and it was just, that was the plan. And I don't know that necessarily, I agree with you, maybe you give him a run and go back at Mania, maybe Mania 6, as things were a lot slower back then, so
yeah.
Mania 6 with that. But
or SummerSlam even.
Yeah, maybe. It's one of those things that...
Well, as a heel champion, I believe the first guy who's defending against, because they needed somebody on the road other than Hogan, wasn't it Duggan?
Well, it was a combination of Duggan and Chico.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they were able to sort of revive and go back to Chico Santana. But because after Hogan lost, or rather after Savage lost to Hogan, and you had a brief feud with Beefcake.
Yes, yes.
Is where he went into. Because at this point, now that Savage has gone heel and Elizabeth not with him anymore, he brings Sensational Sherry on to manage him. And of course, Beefcake started calling her Scary Sherry.
Scary Sherry.
And so that started.
And
that stuck. And that was the feud. Hogan went off and made the movie, No Holds Barred. and which is part of the reason that Savage got the title as well.
Yeah.
As Savage was the main babyface while Hogan was away for that summer doing the movie that was to come out the following year. Things don't move quite as quickly as they do now. But he brought in, it was Randy Savage and Zeus.
Yep.
Tiny Lister, the co-star, I guess you want to say, of No Holds Barred, against Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
SummerSlam 1990.
89.
Was that 89? You're right, 1990 was Hogan, Warrior and Rude in the Cage.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But it was, Earthquake, I guess.
But 89, that's right. Did not have a... what was the opening match? Wasn't it like British Bulldogs? Didn't that have British Bulldogs versus Rougeaux?
I thought 89? It was 89 or against
and then it had
the Brainbusters.
Maybe it was the Brainbusters. Heart Foundation versus Demolition?
Could be.
I remember that being a great show.
It was. But I mean, that led over to Randy
Better
Savage.
Actually than Mania 5. I just should say that main event was actually probably the best match on Mania 5. Mania 5 wasn't a very good show, but Hogan and Savage, Hogan did some chain wrestling and had some blood in the match, and it went about 20 minutes, and it was a good match.
It was a good match. And then from there.
Just to bring up one other thing. Actually, I remember just before that match, a friend of mine, we were in typing class, and he was a huge Savage fan. I couldn't believe I could be, you know? How can you be a fan of this guy now that he's done this to Hogan? And he looks at me really serious towards the end of it, and he turns to me and he goes, "Do you think Randy actually has a chance?" And I'm thinking to myself, no, of course not. He's Hogan. But, I told him he did. I didn't want the guy to cry.
Did you?
Yeah. No, I got a heart.
You have what?
Heart.
Bret Hart?
No.
Oh. Randy Savage is who we're talking about.
I was up at the Hart House a couple
and
days ago.
Yes, I know you were. I know you were. I can't believe that a CFL player owns that house.
Yeah.
I can't believe a CFL player
He works for, like, an oil company now.
I can't believe
so
a CFL player owns a house.
Yeah, that's true.
But Macho Man Randy Savage then beats Hacksaw Jim Duggan in that September to become the Macho King.
That's right.
And Sensational Queen Sherry. And so he continues kind of feuding a little bit.
Was that Macho King character not for too long, but it was memorable.
It was about...
A little more than a year, I think.
A year and a half, almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Because it was that September, and then he went on after...
And this had become an unofficial title, this the King of the Ring, gimmick. It wasn't a tournament at the time. It was a gimmick, it was a tournament, but the Harley Race got the gimmick before the tournament. And then he did win a tournament like that afterwards, though.
I don't think so.
They were already calling
him. We're talking about Randy Savage.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, it became an unofficial title, and it was going back and forth. So when Randy got it, you just assumed he would be called the Macho. He would be called the King, Macho Man Randy Savage, and then he became the Macho King. And he incorporated his two gimmicks together, and, you know, the crown and the way he dressed, and it was just awesome.
Talk about the title, I mean, it went from who's going to be the king, and
Haku,
it was King Haku, and then Duggan beat him, and then was the king over the summer, and then Macho King, and that ended it, actually. But and then he feuded with Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream Baby, because he was the common man.
That's
right. So you had the common man against the Macho King.
So that culminated at Mania 6.
In the mixed tag, the first ever mixed tag. In World Wrestling Federation history, as they would say.
At least on pay-per-view or television.
A major one, anyway, And with Sherry.
I'm surprised if Wendy Richter had tagged with Hogan at some point, but in something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sherry and Savage against Sapphire and Dusty Rhodes, and so on, and Miss Elizabeth came out with Dusty and Sapphire.
Yeah.
In that one, and that was the return of Miss Elizabeth, who had been gone really since WrestleMania 5. So for a whole year, she'd really been gone. And Rhona Barrett was one of the things. She was the big gossip columnist of the day, and she was to sit down and interview Miss Elizabeth, is what it was. And of course, so that really then Dusty WrestleMania 6, and then Randy Savage kind of had a, I don't want to say a boring summer. I don't know if maybe it's surgery or what happened there, but he was gone that summer.
Mm-hmm. And he and Elizabeth were having some marital problems and such at that time, and
yeah, so that could have played into it as well. I don't know, but then he'd come back and was
they
going
had been,
to
yeah, at least had real life being married for many years at this point.
Oh God!
But
yeah.
In storyline, they were about to come marry soon, as coming into Royal Rumble. Talk about him and a warrior at Royal Rumble.
Well, that's what I was getting at, is that he was gone for the summer, and then coming into the fall, Randy Savage had been challenging Warrior and challenging Warrior. And that
Warrior
seemed,
had the title now.
That Warrior was a champion, and that seemed to be what he was doing, and he was getting Sherry to try to seduce Warrior to try to give him a title shot, and Sergeant Slaughter gets that title shot, and, of course, the Macho King then smashes the scepter over the Ultimate Warrior's head, leading to Sergeant Slaughter winning the World Wrestling Federation title at the Royal Rumble, and so then that brought in the match between Warrior and Savage at WrestleMania 7, and the feud was so intense and such hatred there because of the heinous act that Savage had done to the Warrior. At least that's what I thought Warrior said. I'm not sure, but that became a career match.
Yeah, that's
so the loser would retire.
In a day when you didn't see it every other week.
Yeah, Savage was not back on Superstars that Saturday.
No, exactly. That's
part of the Nexus.
This was, many people consider this to be Ultimate Warrior's best match. It was a tremendous match. It's not.
I don't know that many consider this to be Ultimate Warrior's best match. This was Ultimate Warrior's best match.
Actually, I'll tell you this. Okay, this match is not athletically a great feat, but what it is, it's just great storytelling. The psychology and the storytelling behind it, and the multiple elbow drops, and the way it is that way. As a match, I actually think their SummerSlam match, in 92 was actually better as a match. Personally.
That could be, yeah.
The storyline was great in this match. And the importance.
You use the term best match and greatest match. This was Ultimate Warrior's greatest match.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, and the Hogan match was also a miracle, right? So it's basically
that was
those
true.
Two,
that was a miracle.
It's basically
that's right.
Those two matches that you look at.
That is. That's true. But I do consider this his greatest match, and there was, you know, the storytelling about, you know, Warrior was going to, for some reason, he was going to walk away because he was talking to the gods in the heavens above.
Because he had hit his finisher, and yet Savage had kicked out.
Yeah.
And again, in an era where kicking out of, nowadays it's always in every pay-per-view, when the guy hits his finisher, that's when they kick out. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's every pay-per-view, but it wasn't common.
Let's take it a step further, because that was starting to get common in the big matches.
Yeah.
Warrior the year earlier kicked out of the leg drop.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
I mean, people would have, talked about big matches, when they said no one ever kicked out the elbow drop until George Steele did it, They had that reserved for big matches. Randy Savage went up and hit 5 elbow drops off the top rope.
Yeah,
and
I remember watching it live
again. For the cover.
Exactly. I remember watching it live again. At the Corral.
Oh, again at the Corral. Okay.
Yeah. And I remember watching it, and he goes for the first one and the second one, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm cheering for Warrior, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking to myself, why isn't he covering him? And he keeps on going for them. And I'm going, part of me is sitting there going, the psychology of it as a kid, right, watching it going, oh, man, he's doing too many. He's giving too much time to rest in between. But that move is so devastating. Will he or won't he get him? And then, of course, Warrior kicks out. And
with authority.
It was awesome.
And, yes, and then because Warrior, because Savage had kicked out of the splash and the, but yeah, it was just a tremendous match. And, of course, post-match, the Warrior won, Savage's career is done, and Sensational Sherry, upset that she's lost, as Gorilla Monsoon called it, her meal ticket.
Yeah.
That,
she's berating him.
She was berating him, and then she started kicking him.
Yeah.
And, of course,
Kicking
him while he's down. And they showed Elizabeth in the crowd earlier.
Earlier in the matches, they kept on cutting to her,
yeah,
looking
just
crying.
Just to see her reaction,
She was worried and scared,
And she hopped the rail, of course, beat the crap out of Sherry, threw her out of the ring, and that gave Savage time to recover. And, the whole deal where the ref has just told Savage that it was Sherry that was beating her, and Elizabeth saved him, and then Savage, and then they did the whole, as you talked
there
about
you
before,
go.
Looked at the crowd,
they
soaked up
the
moment.
They wanted so badly
right?
for them to hug, and then they did. And look at me right now. Check it out. There's the Goosebumps.
Oh, yeah, I know.
There it is. There's the Goosebumps. I think about that moment. That was the biggest pop of WrestleMania 7, bigger than Hogan winning the title,
yeah.
Bigger than the Ultimate Warrior winning the match, bigger than anything, was seeing Elizabeth and Savage. Because you were emotionally invested in the people back then.
Well, and they could go to the – they went to the crowd, and they'd find, you know –
people crying.
Crying. And then more than one, you know, wasn't it? You just had to key in on that one person.
It was just such a good moment. It just it was just so well done.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and but it was. And that, of course, brought Savage then back as a babyface now.
Yeah, now he was retired. He was an announcer.
And he became the Macho Man.
Yeah.
Again, he dropped the King. So the King was done. And he was a babyface.
Vince thought he was, you know, kind of past his prime at this point. He was already saying that. Because now he's closing in on 40 years old here. You know, and also, I guess he and Elizabeth were talking about having kids. And because then he was, of course, he started off when he was playing baseball. He's like a 165 pounder, you know. And he was wrestling at about 235 when he first entered the Fed. By the time he was the world champion, as IC champion, he was about 235. World champion, he was 245. He would go on to become probably about 285 at the time of his WCW career.
What up,
he was a steroid user, and
perhaps.
You know, he was a steroid user, and you know,
just
I mean,
to rehab injuries though.
Yeah, well, just like Hogan.
Yeah,
yeah. But you know, I mean, they're considering getting off the steroids so they could have children. That was behind the scenes. But
anyway.
Unfortunately, the marriage wasn't so successful at this point. It was falling apart.
No, which was ironic because they had them together, and I don't know if this was a way to maybe, you know, if they
did you enjoy him
together
as a color commentator?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I you know, for what they had for commentator, I don't know that he would fly now.
Yeah.
But for what they had then, I mean, coming off the Venturas, and you had the then you had the three-man booth of Vince, Savage, and Piper.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and I did really enjoy that. I mean, they were all baby faces, but Piper and Savage knew enough that or had been heels and most recently had recently been enough heels with the fan in the fans' eyes, in most fans' eyes, that, you know, when a heel cheated they could kind of be like, yeah, I could see where he's coming from, right? So it was good. You know, I know that's wrong now, but, you know, and he'll one day, you know, figure out that that's wrong, but I could see why he did that kind of.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
I never thought he was really comfortable at it. But he wasn't terrible at it. He's just he didn't know kind of how to fit his character in to also being an analysis. I didn't feel that he had ever grown into it. And he was better than Booker T, but he didn't really get to his best.
But
at
he
it.
Did call one of the he had one of the best commentary participants
Donovan?
Of all time. Yes, with King of the Ring '94 with Gorilla, Art Donovan, and Macho Man. And I thought Macho Man at that point that. That 93-94, that Raw era, if you will, is really when he fell off being a commentator. I thought from that, you know, that 90, what has that been, 91, that first kind of run there, which he only did, you know, he didn't do too much, right?
No,
he
no.
did that run, he did about 6 months worth, and I thought it was good.
But, you know, I mean, leading into this, about this time, Ric Flair debuts, and he took on first the Roddy Piper,
one
commentator.
We're skipping way past here.
Well, we're talking WrestleMania 7, right? Leading into WrestleMania 8.
No, no, but now, yes.
Oh,
yes,
actually,
we are.
You know what?
We're missing. We're missing.
Almost, well, I'm missing a major angle.
We're
right.
missing one of my favorite feuds of
That's
all time.
That's right.
They did the match made in heaven, which was, again, you
talked
about
the marriage, so I thought we'd already covered this.
You talked about the behind-the-scenes wedding, and I don't know if, or behind-the-scenes marital issues with Savage. I don't know if it was part of maybe if they were together on storyline that they could work them out, or maybe be public together and such, but, Savage and Elizabeth, of course, they'd already been married for quite some time, but did a public marriage. The characters married, I guess, for lack of a better word, at SummerSlam 1990.
But there was a gift.
One.
They got a gift. And in that box was?
Was a cobra.
Yeah, from?
Pop the Cobra from Jake the Snake Roberts. And
yes.
Jake the Snake and The Undertaker ruined the wedding reception.
Jake had really recently turned heel before this, turned back heel.
On the Warrior.
After a long babyface
Which
run of his
great
own.
Angle,
also really, you know, good stuff. But yeah, so this was...
Jake
this
was
led
at his...
To, this led to
Jake
one
was
of the,
at his,
one
at
of the
his...
grossest, most... one of the, how do you put it, most violent...
Vile.
Yeah,
yeah.
Images in WWF history.
The Jake was at his peak here, I think.
Yeah.
He was his most coldest, darkest villain.
Yeah,
here.
Probably.
Like, there was no redeeming qualities about Jake the Snake
at this point.
And what happened was he was, you know, trust me. You know, and he was in that just really cold place. And he did the thing with Savage. Of course, Savage vowed revenge. And Jack Tunney, they had the thing, reinstate the Macho Man, right? Reinstate the Macho Man. And you could call the 800 number, the 900 number to get Macho Man reinstated, the cash grab and a half. But, and you know, they had the signs at the shows to reinstate
again,
the Macho Man.
It shows, though, I mean, we talk about how he's not back on Superstars the next week. We bitch about those assholes and how they fuck up all the angles nowadays. Well, guess what? This is exactly what we're talking about. You kept him off for a while, and then you built a reason why the fans wanted him to come back. And then when he came back, number one, it wasn't a stretch, and number two, people were excited.
Well,
you know, not like
that's
what they
part
do
of
now.
The reason that we call them assholes and we get so frustrated is because, I mean, I remember them doing this.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Vince, right? So. But so Randy does this thing, and as you talk about the most vile, the most, what it was, it was an episode of Superstars, I believe, that they had there, and
Jake Roberts was using the Cobra now instead of the Python he had used for most of his career.
Instead of Damien, well, Damien had been squashed, right, and Lucifer was the next coming, the bigger snake, and so now he started to use, and he was wearing a glove because for the thing, and he actually had, like, he didn't necessarily always have a Cobra, but he had, like, asps, and he always had poisonous snakes.
Yeah.
And he'd shoved Elizabeth down, or he slapped Elizabeth, punched
her.
Elizabeth,
yeah.
Or some open hand slapped her, right, and put her down. And then Savage got tied in not in the Tree of Woe, but in that Andre tree, with his hands outstretched in the ropes. And so
get out.
And then so the Cobra comes up, and I guess the Cobra broke character.
Yeah, the Cobra had been devenomized, obviously. But,
well, the
Cobra
went
didn't
into
know
business.
This, and it went after him like... It chewed his arm.
Well, the Cobra thought he was Steven Regal because he went into business for himself.
That's right.
And just chomped on Savage's bicep.
Yeah, and they kept it on for a long time.
You could see it going.
He's chawing back and forth, and Savage is in real pain. Blood coming out of his arm, an X across the screen because it was too graphic for them to fully show.
Sometimes.
But sometimes you'd see it for just a moment in between there.
And Vince
an angle
McMahon.
You will never forget.
That snake better be devenomized.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just, oh yeah.
It was incredible.
And that, of course, that led to Tuesday in Texas.
That's right.
The
unofficial main event.
It really was. Well, they had the co-main events, really, because it was also the rematch of Hogan and Undertaker as well. But I think this was bigger.
This is what people were really anticipating.
Well, much like Savage Steamboat.
And don't forget Skinner versus Bret Hart.
That's right. And what was it? It was Repo Man and
Tito, was it?
And Ted DiBiase against Tito and Virgil. Yes.
Yeah.
El Matador.
That's
and
right.
Virgil. Yes. No, but this a lot like how Hogan and Andre had Savage and Steamboat underneath. You know, the Ultimate or Hogan and Undertaker had this underneath Jake and Savage, and most people.
Unfortunately, even then, and he, not that he learned this because he tried this again with his internet based voting pay per view. Tuesday pay per views don't really work.
No, that's true.
You know,
that is true. Taboo Tuesday.
It took more than one attempt to learn that.
Tuesday in Texas, although it did take him a long time, much like when the WBF failed, it took him a long time to create the XFL. So
yeah.
It's one of those things that...
He's a genius.
Full of glory and renown. But this was the blow-off to the feud, because Undertaker turned babyface. It was a quick fuse. It just got... Basically, it got Savage back.
Got back Savage
and,
back.
And Jake was on his way out, as it turned out, which maybe have been the auspices for you know, shortening this, because it did seem like that should go to Mania.
Well, but Jake did take on Undertaker at Mania.
That was because Jake was on his way out.
But Ric Flair had debuted now earlier. He had feuded first with one commentator,
with
Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
Right? And that kind of there was a moment with Hulk Hogan and Sid Justice. How do we possibly explain all this quickly? Go ahead. Give it your best effort.
Essentially, they'd announced Hogan versus Flair as the main event for WrestleMania 8.
Coming out of the Royal Rumble.
Yes, that's fine. But we don't need to go there because it's about Savage. They went with Hogan and Flair, and then Sid Justice ended up turning heel on Hogan in a tag match at Saturday Night's main event. And so then Hogan gave up his title shot to go after Sid for revenge for what Sid did to his buddy Brutus Beefcake.
Well, you'll remember when they're announcing who's going to face the title.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, Sid was assuming he was going to be the guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
he got jealous. But the bottom line is that moved Hogan over to Sid, which meant that Randy Savage was going to fight Ric Flair.
Now, at the time, I was not excited about that match. I was excited to see – I wanted to see Hogan versus Flair more.
Well, that's just
that was the match. Mm. And I didn't mind seeing Hogan versus Justice, but I wanted to see Hogan versus Flair. That was the thing. Mm-hmm. But they kept on talking about how Randy Savage is the ideal opponent to take on Ric Flair. He's the perfect opponent, style-wise and physically. Mm-hmm. And I started to buy into it. And they went into WrestleMania 8, and I still thought Flair was going to win, but he didn't.
That's not how they sold the match, though.
Sold it to me. That's how I remember
it. No.
There was a gimmick, but that's not what I cared about. I didn't
Randy,
really care about that.
Elizabeth was mine before she was yours. Yeah. Woo! Yes, that was the deal. And the spread in WWF magazine that showed Rick and Liz before, and the gimmick basically being that Ric Flair had dated Elizabeth because in storyline, Randy and Elizabeth had only been married less than a year, right?
Six,
8 months, right? So it was conceivable, not inconceivable, like in The Princess Bride, that...
Or like in TNA.
Or in TNA, which just shouldn't even been allowed to have been conceived, that it was conceivable that Flair could have dated Elizabeth, 3 years ago, right? So... In storyline. So that was the gimmick, and that was the deal, and of course later finding out that the photos had been doctored and such, and they were
I didn't care about that, it was more just a mind game.
But that was the storyline that they had used after the fact to talk about the match. So.
Yeah, and that was a great Mania, and that was, they had a bloody match, and a really good match. Savage wins the belt by holding the tights of the dirtiest player in the game, which really upset Kurt Hennig, who was the Mr. Perfect, who was the second to Ric Flair at the time. But Ric Flair didn't mind because he would have done the same thing and cuts this great promo at the end. And it was an awesome, awesome match, either the best or second best match of the night, along with the Hart and Piper match.
That's right.
So
they went over the summer, and that got to your favorite match there with the Ultimate Warrior.
That's right, because he has the title, and you're assuming he's going to defend it against Flair at WrestleMania. Then they announced the SummerSlam, who had returned at the previous WrestleMania 8, who had returned at the main event.
After the whole
thing, and they announced
that
he was going to take on Savage. And you're going, oh, Savage can't beat him. And Savage is going, oh, I can beat him. And then you also had Perfect and Flair at ringside.
Well, Perfect and Flair had said they were going to be in the corner of the highest bidder.
That's right. But and then to play these two off against each other.
Yes.
And this was designed to lead to a tag team match, the Survivor Series, that never took place for
that's
different
right.
reasons. But.
Because Razor Ramon had come in and said, he oozed with machismo, macho man.
Yeah.
And so that was to set the next feud. And Razor Ramon. So we should say that Randy Savage beat the Ultimate Warrior at Wembley Stadium at SummerSlam 92.
I thought it was like a double disqualification.
It could have very well. He retained the title.
But the point was, though, he went head-to-head with him, and you didn't come out of it going, oh, he was going to lose.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
was the thing. This time you didn't think he was going to lose. He went head-to-head with him, had a great match.
The big thing is Razor Ramon cost Savage the title at a house show against Ric Flair.
Yep.
So Ric Flair, your WWF champion again. Savage now moving into a feud with Razor Ramon.
That's right.
Which is what brought in the whatever they were, the Mega Maniacs or whatever was going to be the Warrior. And Savage against Razor and... and Ric Flair to one of my my
brother already lost the title by then.
My brother and I used to do the gimmick for years, and if I, next time I see him, I can do it. And it just anytime we there was a toothpick around, razor. I remember on one of the big stage deals they used to have with Mean Gene Okerlund.
Yeah, and, those were great.
And Razor would of course say, "I carve you up," and he'd flick the toothpick at you, right?
Yeah.
So he did that to Randy Savage, flicked the toothpick at him, and Randy Savage goes, "I think you dropped your toothpick." Pick, and he went down to pick it up and then punched him in the face and
awesome.
Started brawling him with it. And it was just, it was such a great, great, it was just a funny line to hear from him. I think you dropped your toothpick.
Yeah.
And then he just went and he beat the shit out
of him. By the way, Addy, while we're recording here, has in the Palacio Studios of Addy, of, you know, Home Addy, Big Addy Cool's gold encrusted marble floor. Studios. He's wearing a Macho Man from 1986 purple T-shirt.
I do have my Macho Man shirt
awesome.
On, and I'm staring right now. There's a picture of Macho Man Randy Savage bicep pose with cowboy hat in hand.
You know, I
I've
talked
done.
About how, just to go back real quick, I talked about how I saw Savage, and that's what brought me into the WWF after kind of stomping wrestling when they shut down Stampede for a little bit. He was also the very first poster. The very first issue of a PWI I ever bought was shortly after he turned face, you know, against Honky Tonk Man. They had a poster. They had, you know, it had like his stats and his age and his different moves, and and that was the first wrestling poster I ever put up from PWI. He was a centerfold on my wall. I kept it up for many years. Savage was the man.
Yeah, oh, definitely was the man. So where were we here? Okay, so we talked about his thing with Razor, and then that really led him into retirement, and then he became that Rock. When Raw debuted, it was he was the commentator at that point.
Yeah, and Mania 9, he was you know the commentator with the
Jim
debuting
Ross.
Jim Ross and Bobby Heenan. But didn't he come out of that have a short feud set up? No, wasn't it him and Michaels, or was that Perfect and Michaels? I can't remember.
Perfect and Michaels.
Perfect and Michaels.
No, Savage did come out of retirement WrestleMania 10.
He was really talking up Michaels when he was on retirement. But again, Vince thought he was too old, but you're right. He took on Crush at Mania 10
It was a terrible match. It was an angle where the big man from Kona, Hawaii, babyface Crush, had been, you know, just that close to beating Yokozuna and becoming the WWF champion, but he got squashed and killed, and Randy Savage came out and to help him.
Yeah.
Finally, afterwards, and that it knocked the Danbanzai dropped a few times, and that had knocked Crush out for months or weeks, months back then, and every time. They'd interview him from as he was convalescing at home. And Vince McMahon would get an interview out for a minute or so, and then Randy would go, "Crush, you're not returning my phone call." And click.
Yeah, that's right.
And Crush was just was pissed at Savage for seemingly no reason, since Savage wouldn't help him, but that's what heels do. And then he came back with the paint, all that demolition,
purple
and black,
silver.
And the manager, Mr. Fuji, aligning basically with Yokozuna, the man that put him out, and blaming the guy that tried to help him, Randy Savage, for even being out in the first
place. Not a lot of logic behind it, and like I say, not a good match.
Well,
it's a pinfall count anywhere match, but the gimmick was at Mania 10. And this was the first pinfall count anywhere match I can recall seeing.
Awesome.
So, and the gimmick being that you pin the guy outside the ring, then the guy had 10 seconds to get back in the ring. It was 60 seconds.
60
You're
seconds.
Right. So, I mean, it just took forever for that 60 seconds to go by. And eventually, you know, I mean, I believe Crush pinned Randy Savage off of – he picked him up and kind of did a – lifted
stun
him up.
Gun.
Yeah, kind of a stun gun off the barrier.
He draped his throat over the rail. He picked him up and pressed him over the railing.
Yeah, and he pinned him in like a minute into the match.
What
the fuck?
And then took 58 seconds to get back in the ring.
Yeah, exactly. And then Savage ends up winning because he tied him up with some rope that was
just
handy outside.
Well, what he was
just
supposed
terrible.
To do was hang him upside down by his feet.
But he couldn't get him up. He couldn't lift
him
up.
No, he could lift him up, but then when he tried to tie the knot, it all slipped back down, so it was just stupid.
It was terrible.
And it was,
it was a shame because that was really his last major match
in WWF.
In WWF.
Yeah.
So
and that's what it was. Then he went back to being the commentator in November of 1994.
But he wanted to get in the ring. Vince didn't want him.
Well, that's the thing. And in November of 1994, Vince McMahon said, just did a thing on Raw where he said, you know, Randy Savage... you know, his contract is up in WWF, and he's chosen not to return. We wish Randy the best in his future endeavors.
Well, they did. Wasn't there? There was rumors at the time that right before he left, that they were going to put the title on him again.
Yeah,
third time.
I think maybe. But regardless, he's gone.
He
left, and it sort of took really by shock, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
well, they didn't really have. I mean, Hogan had already left, and they didn't really. They hadn't built properly somebody to fill that void underneath.
The thing
because
was,
Warrior
was,
had gotten steroids and that type of thing.
It
right?
was the new generation. Well, this was 94 now, right?
Yeah.
So this is in between. This is smack dab in between Warriors leaving and coming back.
Yeah,
but
92 and 96.
92 and 96. Yeah. So
they didn't really have anybody else though.
And they didn't. And they. I mean, they tried with Luger.
They
was
tried
the
with
thing,
Luger,
right? And
when that didn't work out, I think that was when the rumor was that they were going to put it on Savage keep him from leaving.
Savage was
out.
Still a big part, though. I mean, you'd had the new WWF generation, as they called it. And Randy Savage was still in those commercials.
Yep.
You know, and was still doing these things. So, I mean, anyway, Randy Savage goes to WCW, joins Hogan.
Yeah,
in WCW. And I remember the gimmick with when Savage was there. Is he going to shake Hogan's hand, or is he going to slap him in the face?
That's right. That was actually well done.
And they did that for a few weeks, and then he showed up and, of course, shook his hand, and it became the, you know, they couldn't call it the Mega Powers again, but that's what it was, Hogan and Savage against really the Dungeon of Doom with Big Bubba and Butcher and,
mm-hmm.
and the Avalanche, who was Earthquake, and, mm-hmm. and Kevin Sullivan.
Big Bubba, the Big Boss Man.
The Boss Man, yeah. And so that's in the Faces of Fear. That's what it was. It wasn't the Dungeon. It was the Faces of Fear.
Yeah.
And then that morphed into... So he kind of did that over the first year, really.
Mm-hmm. Mang and Barbarian were Faces of Fear, correct?
Well, not they later were, but the Faces of Fear, they were the three Faces of Fear, which were Butcher, Sullivan, and Avalanche, I believe.
Yeah. Now, this was... Business wasn't great right away when Savage got there, but he was certainly a catalyst for when they did turn it around. The booking was pretty bad generally. I mean, you had essentially Hogan and Savage at what was it at Starcade? They took on basically the entire heel roster, the two of them, and beat them.
The very first Uncensored in that Triple Cage thing.
Yeah, it was
and
bad.
Zeus came back.
That's right, the Z Gangster
and Jeep Swanson.
Yeah.
The guy from Bane from the Batman movie there,
yeah.
He was in it. But yeah, that's when they went through the whole three tiers and basically beat the whole fucking roster.
It was terrible.
Yeah, that was the Horsemen and everything. Yeah,
yeah. Buried the entire roster.
Yeah. Because that previous Starcade was Beefcake against Hogan.
Hogan, that's right.
Yeah. Anyway,
was he the man with no name then, or the Zodiac?
Butcher.
Butcher. Okay.
Butcher. Yeah,
not
Butcher.
The Booty Man.
Not the Booty Man. It was Butcher, and then he lost, and that's
not
when he got kicked
face?
Out. Not Fur Face, no. Nope. Although, so Savage then morphed into his feud with Flair,
mm-hmm.
and it really was that.
That was just prior to the NWO, and that was an angle that started to get the house shows. Ball rolling again.
Well, I remember back
started
up a bit.
Started a rating increase.
But
that was the first hot feud they'd had in a while.
If you back up a bit, Nitro debuted.
Yeah.
And Luger showed up at the very first Nitro, and Savage didn't trust Luger.
That's right.
So Savage was telling Hogan, you can't trust this guy.
Yeah.
And Sting, as Luger's best friend, is telling Hogan, you can.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that was playing, you know, both guys were you know, sort of both eyeing for Hogan's attention, essentially. And then, as I said, and then that morphed into that December with Flair, and it became...
And Flair was, Flair
it
was
became
spending...
became Flair and Anderson.
Flair was spending...
No, well, back, wait.
Okay,
Flair
ahead.
And Anderson against Hogan and Savage.
That's right.
And they brought Elizabeth back.
That's right.
And Elizabeth turned heel.
With Flair.
And joined up with Flair and Woman.
Yeah. Elizabeth, with a brand new set of tits, joined Flair.
Yes.
Yeah,
and then that was
good.
The deal that did she did, and that was the deal where I don't know that Elizabeth ever looked bad, to be honest.
No, she never
that
did.
Was the deal where they said, okay, yes, that's they're you know, they've divorced, and now yes, that's when Flair is spending Savage's money.
He was just rubbing in his face. Yes. You know, they show him as woman and Elizabeth at poolside in the lap of luxury, and he's spending
he's going,
the alimony.
Randy, you paid for this, pal.
And it was
thank
just
you.
Awesome, and the fans really bought into that gimmick. It was really, really, like I say, the first hot feud they'd had in a while, just prior to the NWO, and was, and I wouldn't say, I don't know if I'd say that WCW wouldn't have been as hot with just the NWO, but I'm not sure it would have been.
What?
If it had been, if the NWO had happened, but that Savage
Flair. The
NWO Flair,
did happen.
Yeah, but if the NWO had happened and that Savage Flair didn't happen first, listen to me, don't pay attention to fucking turning on lights and drinking beer, I'm more important. If that hadn't happened, I'm not sure that that would have taken off to quite the same degree, because they'd already have built momentum within the company.
Mo, when'd you get here? So anyway, as I was saying, with this Savage and Flair feud, I think that if they hadn't had that feud, I don't know that the NWO would have been hot as it was. What are your thoughts?
You're such a douche. Anyway, so Hogan was a hot heel champion now. And Savage was still a babyface, and this led into a feud, and they ended up picking on each other.
Savage,
Halloween Havoc.
Savage, yes, because Savage was on Team WCW against the Outsiders and the Mystery Man who became
right.
Hogan, right? So there were the three of them, and then Elizabeth.
I'm going to open another beer.
Still as a heel, yes, still as a heel, was joined the NWO.
That's right.
And so then Savage fought Hogan, that culminated at the Halloween Havoc. Where Hogan won, and then that's where Roddy Piper debuted. Savage's, I believe his contract was up at the time,
mm-hmm.
Which would have made sense because he went to he left Vincent in that November, so October, so that would seemingly make sense that his contract would be up.
If you'll remember, this was about the time when you and I had met, actually. This was the very, very
right.
first ever WCW pay-per-view I ever ordered. And I gave you the tape, like, the next day.
Yes, well, that night.
Yeah, that night.
I came back.
Yeah, exactly. Because it was great. The opening match was Ray versus Dean Malenko, and it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an excellent event. Hogan was really good as a heel here. But I remember going into the match really wanting Macho to win, because I kept on thinking to myself, Macho's done the honors for Hogan so many times. Isn't it his turn now that he's the babyface to be the one to get it? But when, you know, he lost, and then... Piper comes out, and the Giant's there, and he's calling him Stay Back Sprite.
Sit Back Sprout.
Sprout.
Sit Back.
Yeah, yeah, all that stuff. It made sense. It was really a terrific angle. Unfortunately, shortly after that, when the NWO was expanding, and something that didn't make sense, and this was prior to Russo getting there, Savage turned heel, but it did lead to something great for DDP. But Savage turns heel, joins the NWO shortly after coming back.
The part that didn't make sense, and the Russo-rific part of this all, was that, yeah, Savage lost, and so he was gone for a little while. And then, of course, this is the time where Sting is in the rafters, and Sting's
yep.
got the baseball bat and the mystery, and, you know, whose side is he on? And NWO is claiming they have him, and he's attacking guys like Rick Steiner and stuff, and people are going, like, what the fuck? And he's turning his back to him and seeing if he'll hit him, and all that deal, which with that part of it was great television. The first 4 or 5 months of,
yep.
of this Sting thing was just phenomenal.
Phenomenal stuff.
And Savage then, though, started coming down with Sting
mm-hmm.
in black and white. Not the black and everybody's in black and white. Fuck.
Yeah.
But Savage started coming with a baseball bat and doing the thing with, like, DDP, for instance. So the two of them would come down.
Yep.
But then at a pay-per-view...
Because, yeah, it was essentially... They're setting it up so you're thinking the team to take down NWO is DDP, Sting, and Savage.
DDP, Sting, Savage, and
the
Steiners.
And the Steiners.
No, not even the Horsemen.
Not
this
even the Horsemen.
Steiners.
Right, yeah, the Steiners.
And,
that's right. They were taking on the Outsiders.
Yeah. And so that was going to be...
The car crash. Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
Anyway.
But that was going to be your team, right? And so... And what had happened then is at a pay-per-view, let's say like a Super Brawl or something, that Savage turned and joined the NWO just
yeah.
kind of randomly all of a sudden. Like he was coming down with Sting for weeks, and then all of a sudden he was in the NWO.
And they never really explained it well. And, you know, it was just a swerve for a swerve's sake. But the gimmick was,
yeah.
I mean, the competition between the Monday Night Wars at that point, WCW, WWF at the time, were so high.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they thought of, Bischoff thought was, their advantage was our show, you don't know what's coming. Our show, we're going to surprise you. And that worked for a little while, but, you know, again, it's a temporary solution, and ended up hurting them long term. But like I say, why don't you go into, to say about that.
No, I'm just going to say the one thing, and I think we were going to the same place here, is that the one thing that happened there was that's when he did start the feud with DDP.
DDP,
he really put DDP on the map.
Yeah, he really did. DDP was really mid-card, trying to work his way into the upper mid-card at the time.
I don't even know if he was...
mid-card. He was mid-card because he had done the Battle Bowl gimmick with Eddie Guerrero and that type of stuff, right? And the ring and the different things and had been like TV champion, won the lottery. You know, he was a mid-card act, but he had started to get a few wins, but people didn't take him seriously, and then he and Savage had this great feud. Now, 1996, they had, let's put it this way, 1996 was the same year that Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin started, and 1997, where, you know, continued into that year, and everybody talks about that as being the greatest feud. This is how good Savage and DDP was in 1997. Now, looking back, you wouldn't say that this is right, but at the time, it was number one, and Hart and Austin was number two in the Observer Awards for Feud of the Year. That's how good of a feud it was.
Possibly the PWI Awards, too. I don't even know. But
yeah, it could be.
It, you're right, in that it was that really was the case. It was because it was a great feud,
it
lasted.
Long time.
God, most of 97?
It lasted all of 97, you know, DDP beat Savage in their first pay-per-view match together.
You didn't think
that was going to happen.
No.
So that made DDP.
I think that really
made
the feud.
And you had the Parker thing where he was dressed. DDP was less dressed like Parker, and that was just awesome. Like I say, Savage made DDP, and much like Austin was made by Bret Hart, and you know, Savage made DDP, and Foley made Triple H. You know, and the difference, of course, is that DDP and
appreciates it. Yeah,
DDP and Austin appreciate that somebody helped them, whereas Triple H hates Foley for saying it.
Which that's awesome. But
yeah, what a good person.
But that was it. I mean, he put DDP on the mat, brought DDP to the title. And then, I mean, Savage, what did he do? He joined the Wolf Pack.
Yeah,
Then he got hurt, though.
Yeah, he did.
And he was out for about a year.
Close to, yeah.
Yeah.
Did he come back then? That was the Rodman stuff?
He came back, I guess before the Rodman stuff, though, is he came back, and that's when he came back jacked to the gills.
Yeah, he came back like 285.
And with Gorgeous George, it was like 21 or 22. He made Team Madness.
That's right.
Who was Macho Man, Gorgeous George, Mona, Miss Madness, who
that's
was
right.
Molly Holly, Medusa.
That's right.
And Psycho Sid Vicious was his bodyguard.
That's right. He was kind of a tweener character at the time too. When he came back, but you know.
Yeah,
it's funny because Gorgeous George was, I believe, a stripper who was his real-life girlfriend at the time.
Yeah, who was, like I said, 21, 22.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing was, is Savage would have been, you know, mid-40s, you know, sort of thing.
Late 40s.
Yeah, late 40s, yeah.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Yeah.
But, boy. But the thing is the gimmick when it first came out was that Savage was always interfering to make sure that DDP... won.
Yeah.
DDP was a champion at the time.
Yeah.
And he was making sure that DDP was keeping the title. And I remember sitting there thinking that this was probably gonna play out to be a similar situation like Savage and Steamboat, where, you know, when he did the thing you mentioned with Hercules.
Yeah.
Where Savage wanted to be the one to beat DDP.
Exactly.
But then I
do remember somewhere around this time, I'm not sure if it was shortly before this, after this, I remember that he had a pay-per-view mini feud and a match with Bret Hart, and I thought it would be awesome because we never mentioned this. We go back and we talk about that Honky Tonk era.
Yes.
The first time...
Saturday
Night's Main Event with Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Bret Hart, this is the first time I saw Bret Hart in a singles match in the WWE that was high profile.
Right.
He was a tag team partner, but just tag teams were still tag teams. I'd seen him here in Calgary, of course, being a Calgarian, and, you know, I knew he was good. But
you saw Bret Hart in Calgary being a Calgarian?
Yes. I saw him... Shut up! But anyways, I point being that I knew Bret was good, but I thought he was good Stampede level. I didn't see him as being on the level of the best. And then he went in and had this incredible match on Saturday Night's Main Event where he worked the knee of Randy Savage. And they went for like 20, 25 minutes. It was maybe the greatest TV match I'd seen up to that date. I mean, for many years, I think it was the greatest TV match I'd seen. Yeah. Just again, it was like we talk about how that match with Steamboat, you didn't see matches at that pace and that style. This was the same thing.
Was that match on video, or what was the match on?
Saturday Night's Main Event.
Was it on TV?
It was on TV.
Okay.
It was a television match.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, it was but it was a great match. The first time I took Bret Hart being serious as being probably about the same level as the very best wrestlers as a single star. And that match did that for me. And what's interesting is, according to Bret Hart in his book, was that they had the entire match laid out the way Randy Savage does. And minutes before they went out there,
they cut time.
Yeah, and Vince cut time and told them you have to work the knee. Gave them that instruction. And they're like, we already have a great match set up. He's like, I don't care. This is how much time you have.
Work the knee.
And then they end up having this just spank. And Savage is selling in this match of the knee. This is what you should show young people how to work on selling.
That's early in Bret's career. So that's actually on page 3,265 of his book.
Yeah, chapter one.
Yeah. That's the prologue, actually. But, so that really, I mean, Savage had Team Madness, and I remember he had that stupid,
the WCW match. The worst part was disappointing, that's all.
The worst part of that deal was then he fought Nash.
Yeah.
And I remember it was just the stupidest,
he was too big.
Literally the stupidest shit, though. Remember when they had the contortionist come out of the bag and spray shit on Nash or Savage? I don't remember who.
No, was Russo there?
No, but the infamous White Hummer was in that match. Who was driving the Hummer?
That's right.
And we never found out. And then later at that Road Wild is when Dennis Rodman fought Randy Savage.
That's right. And prior to that, they had had a promo together where they were WCW Nitro was the PG show, whereas the Attitude Era and Raw, of course, was not. But they went beyond what you could go on Raw. Like, they did everything but drop the F-bomb on this show.
Oh, yeah.
Sexual references and S-bombs and all. They were, and, because Rodman started going there. And you could kind of see, I remember looking at it and watching and thinking.
Going where?
Down there.
Going there.
But anyways, so he's going there, and I remember Savage thinking to himself, can we go there? Can't we go there? And he kind of pauses for a second. And then Rodman does this, says something else really lewd like that and going too far. And Savage goes, well, what the hell? We've already gone that far. And he starts going for it, too, and it became crazy, going back with all this stuff that they couldn't say. Until finally Bischoff comes out live television and goes, cut those two maniacs' mics! Because he's seeing all the fines that are coming
in,
right?
And if I might, it was madness.
It was madness.
And then he did that, and then Savage again after that Rodman match disappears.
Yeah,
and comes back. There was a when Russo and Bischoff took over.
He was too big; he couldn't move anymore.
Well, when Russo and Bischoff took over, and it was the New Blood against the Millionaires Club on Thunder. They had a New Blood Millionaires Club Battle Royal, Royal Rumble, something or other. And Savage came in and attacked everybody.
Yeah. And then you didn't see him again.
And for himself. And then you never saw him again.
He didn't have a contract at the time. It was a one shot.
Yeah.
So.
And then, so Vince Russo was there. And then he showed up at TNA.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was it. It was 2000 there. And that was it for 4 years.
Yeah.
Almost 5 years until late 2004, he showed up in TNA to team with like Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles against the Kings of Wrestling on a pay per view. And again, one and done, and that was it. And
what was the era there where he and Hogan were working together somewhere around this time, and Hogan demanded he has bodyguards because he's worried Savage is going to legitimately beat the shit out of him backstage?
Yeah, that was TNA.
That was in TNA. Yeah, Savage was a legit tough guy. And a legit crazy guy.
Well, like, you remember him and him and Hawk.
Oh yeah,
At one of Hogan's many, or one of Savage's many rap concerts.
Yes. Oh, we got to talk about that.
Yes.
Talk about the rap stuff.
Be a man, Hulk.
Yeah.
Randy Savage had a
terrible
rap album. Yes, he did.
This was worse than Dee Dee Ramone's rap album. This was bad stuff.
You know what? I just remember. I don't remember what website that I used to go to, but they had an ad for the album on the website, and every time your mouse would scroll over, the ad would go, "Buy my CD!"
Yeah.
Oh my god, it was just so funny. So I just keep scrolling over.
So anyways, TNA, right? You just quickly...
But that was it. That's all that happened, is TNA. Basically he was... one pay-per-view, he was one and done.
Yeah, and basically he was gonna do
him
more.
And Hogan had a confrontation.
Yeah, he and Hogan.
Hogan came up to him, apparently, as the story goes, and said, "If you're going to do something," and Savage left.
Savage also apparently told him, "You know what, I can't..." Like, he didn't want to be seen as a guy who was no longer as good as he once was. It was one of the reasons why
was backstage. "Beat the shit out of me right now."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Savage backed down.
Yeah.
And that was how the story went.
Yeah.
I don't know when there, but that's how the story went. And that was the last public wrestling appearance of Randy Savage.
Yeah. Well, like I say, he lost a lot of weight, apparently. Hopefully got off the roids, but too late, apparently, because I'm certain that was part of the emphasis for his heart attack.
But that really, yeah, I'm sure. But that was his wrestling career. I just want to throw some other random notes out. And that's it. Snap into it. You need a little, art thou bored? Need a little excitement? Snap into a Slim Jim.
Yeah, national spokesman for Snap into a Slim Jim. You can't forget it.
Well, Slim Jim's Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that was just... But, I mean, the Slim Jim before that, and even when
when he took on Hogan that night, he gave away a truck or something like that from Slim Jim.
A monster truck?
Yeah, I believe so, actually.
Off Cobo Hall?
Nope.
Oh.
Because it wasn't a stupid angle. But it was strange to see a guy who's got a talent for the main event doing this kind of light comedy giving away a truck thing earlier in the night.
You won the truck!
No. Yeah, but it wasn't Todd Pettin.
No.
But, and also, I don't know if we can forget, Spider-Man. Bonesaw's ready.
Bonesaw's ready. I remember going to the theater at the time with my whole family to see the Spider-Man movie. Whole family's there. And I'm sitting at the end of the, five or six of us there, and I'm sitting at the end of there, and all of a sudden I get tapped on the shoulder when that comes on. And I knew that Randy Savage was Bonesaw McGraw in the movie already. I knew that going in. But all of a sudden I get tapped on the shoulder, and my brother's sitting beside me, and he goes, "Is that Macho Man?" And I look over at him, and my whole family, like, it went down the row. Like, my dad asked, my mom asked, my sister asked. And so they're all looking at me down the three, and all the four of them are looking at me, and I just go, "Yeah." And they're like, "Wow, okay."
Yeah, exactly.
Because they didn't think he looked like him.
No,
but you know the voice.
That's the other thing is that, I went and saw that opening weekend. I was really into that I really enjoyed that movie, and he came out, I was enjoying that, but I remember getting the DVD and bringing it home and watching the commentator track, and the director, Sam Raimi, didn't watch wrestling, didn't know who this was, but he heard him talk, and apparently he goes, "Is that this guy's real voice?"
They said,
and he goes, "Okay, we got to give him a line." Because he didn't have any lines. And that's how that Bonesaw's really came to be. Because he heard him talk. It was like, he's got to have a line. That voice is too great. We got to use it. So,
That's right. They had I do remember that now, that he'd never...
Yeah.
He never heard him talk. And then he was talking to him back... Or he heard him talk.
Heard him talking.
Backstage.
And said, "We got to use that voice."
So. But that was... Yeah. And that was just...
And Bonesaw's ready. Everybody remembers that line from that movie.
Oh, definitely. I mean,
just awesome stuff.
It's classic.
So, that's pretty much, our memories. We're celebrating the life, the greatness, and any last thing you want to say on the Macho King, the Macho Man?
The greatest, I'll remember him as, in my mind, one of the top five guys of all time.
Absolutely. When I look at, Bret Hart was great in the ring and good on the mic, Hulk Hogan was great on the mic and fair in the ring. Savage had it both. I don't know anybody. If I was to give him, I'd give him a 9.5 out of 10 on one and a 9.5 out of 10 on the other, probably. And I don't know anybody else who has that perfect a combination. So
Curt Hennig?
Not even Curt Hennig.
You said perfect. No. When I look
Dolph Ziggler.
Yes, he is perfection. When I look at...
Stan Stasiak.
When I look at Randy Savage, and that's what I used to take from... And then the Mania 3
Sean
match,
Stasiak.
Right?
Sean Stasiak.
Oh, meat.
Meat.
But I look at Randy Savage, when I being a kid, he was the guy that could work to me.
Yeah.
He was the
Bret takes. Hart said this. Bret Hart said, this was the guy I was chasing to become the best worker in the company.
He said
and when I became it, Shawn Michaels was chasing me to become the best worker in the company.
That was his WrestleMania 12 promo.
Yeah.
In the build up there when they're doing the workouts. He said, you know, I always look like I was trying to get to be Randy Savage, and now here's Shawn Michaels knocking at my door.
Yeah,
and
that's
I'm
right,
Randy
exactly.
Savage, right? And Randy Savage had already
and
gone.
That was a shoot.
That was a shoot, and Randy Savage had already been in the other company for a couple of years, right?
Yep.
So he was the Nacho Man in those Billionaire Ted skits.
Yeah, and, we can't forget those. We didn't even hit those.
Well, that's fine.
That's fine.
But
terrible, you know, Vince comedy.
The thing is, for me, Hogan, Savage, Andre, Rock, Austin, to me, are the top five. And when I look at it, what I'll remember, I tell you what, I'll never attend. Another.
What was it again? Your top five. Give it to me again.
Hogan, Andre, Savage, Austin, Rock.
Okay.
I will never attend another high school graduation. Same again. You know, of course, the pomp and circumstance, Randy Savage's music, also the traditional
iconic
music.
As well.
Iconic, but also
both
the
versions, the WCW and the WWF.
The
version.
Music they play, though, is, you know, traditionally at a high school graduation. Sam, I remember graduating from high school, and you wear the robes, and I remember going down the Jubilee Auditorium here in Calgary, going down the aisle way to get to my seat, and the music is playing. So I put my arms out in the robe, and I did the spin.
Yeah.
And I did the finger twirl, the pinky finger twirl.
What was it you said to me earlier? You made a joke about him and Papa.
Well, we got a tweet from Shebang728 who said, how ironic is it that we go out when we graduate high school, we go out to pomp and circumstance Randy Savage's music as we're dressed up like the genius.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, Randy's brother.
Exactly.
So,
full of glory and renown. Absolutely, yeah. And I just... And another thing, you talk about his mannerisms, the eyes, the fingers, and the way he did it and held out his arms, the expressions, the gimmick in general. This is, to me, one of the reasons why I miss the way wrestling used to develop and the characters used to develop. Because you can't write this. A writer's never going to write this gimmick. You have to live this gimmick and be this gimmick and feel this gimmick and come up with a gimmick like this yourself. And this is a guy who dressed in a way that you couldn't get away with unless you were confident that you looked great and were confident doing it. And that's the thing. He could dress like that and look like that because he believed he was great doing it. And it's just he was – nobody who saw Randy Savage – like there's some wrestlers like a Coco Beware, a Tito Santana, a Bret Hart.
Arriba.
These guys, you might go, yeah, I was into them or not into them.
I may
not have had a huge opinion of them, you know, one way or another. Everybody had an opinion on Randy Savage.
Oh, yeah. And to me, I mean, ooh, yeah. In my life, I was 16 years old or 15 years old, because I didn't turn 16 yet. I was 15 years old when Andre the Giant.
When you get ID'd for your alcohol, people think you still haven't turned 16.
Well, that's true. But still drink it. When Andre the Giant died, I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
This, with Macho Man Randy Savage, this is the biggest wrestler in my life to pass away. This is the biggest career that I was a part of in professional wrestling that's passed away. You talk about your Owen Harts and your Eddie Guerreros and your Chris Benoits and your tests. This is the biggest career that I've seen, that I was a part of, that I grew up with from national prominence start to finish. This is the biggest one yet. Mm-hmm. And
one last
thoughts and prayers to the friends and family of Macho Man Randy Savage, and we're gonna miss him, and as I said,
we will never forget him.
The world's never gonna be the same, and I guess we gotta cheers our beers and give it ooh yeah.